Baby, now you ready. Welcome to the Full Press Packers Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra, and joining me is my co-host, Jesse Hall. Jesse, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm ready for week two. Yeah, things are good.
No other comments needed. I refer to the previous episode if you need to hear anything else, but moving forward from here on out. Hey, you know what? Good news. The Packers are still tied for the NFC North lead, because all four teams lost to week one. Sorry to our guest, Trevor Toslowski. So Trevor, welcome. And the Lions are also tied for first in the NFC North. So I guess congratulations on that.
Yep, that is the spot in the division that we are. I feel like a first place fan right now.
Hey, see, look, all positives here already.
But yeah, to start, we actually, as much as Jesse and I want to move forward, we're actually going to rewind all the way back to when Matthew Stafford, franchise quarterback for the Lions, and I don't know how you feel about it, but arguably the greatest quarterback that the team's ever had, was traded. So what were your thoughts about what they got back, Jared Goff, the two first-round picks, and just kind of your thoughts and emotions when the trade happened?
I think the interesting thing about the NFL is that I don't know if there's ever been a trade that I can remember where both teams got accurate value for the player that they were getting rid of. In the NBA, you see marginal guys go for first round picks, and superstars go for literally every pick that a team is able to trade, which is just something that doesn't really happen in the NFL. So I think in terms of the return, it was as good as you're going to get. And obviously you'd like more first round picks. And the thing is that if the Rams are right and Stafford improves their team, those first round picks are worth getting rid of because they're going to be in the back half of the first round anyways. It was a bittersweet day for me. I have wholeheartedly believed that Matthew Stafford is a much better quarterback than the national narrative would lead you to believe, but was never really put in a position on a team-wide level. There were times where he had good defenses, and there were times where the running game was okay. But between all of that and him playing through injuries, he was never really given a perfect slate to play from to be successful with. And it was bittersweet because I wanted him to stay a Lion forever. I think you were right in saying that he's the greatest quarterback the Lions have ever had. But at the same time, he deserves to have the level of success that his skill dictates. And that wasn't going to come from Detroit. And so I think he has a real chance to play with probably the best defense he's ever had or will have this year. He's had plenty of skill guys at the wide receiver position that were good. I think even this past year, I think people underrate how good, Marvin Jones is. I know Kenny Galladay got the big contract, but Marvin Jones was arguably the best receiver on that team last year. So he's always had offensive weapons. I don't think that's really going to move the needle either way. I don't think Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp and, you know, whoever else the Rams have is that huge of an upgrade over what he's had offensively. But this should be the best defensive team that he's ever played with. And, you know, it was interesting to see on Twitter after that first throw to Van Jefferson, people go, you know, start singing the praises. And people that are Lions fans could tell you, this is what we've been telling you about for years. When you said that our team's trash and no good and Matthew Stafford isn't that good, like, he is good. He's outstanding. I think he's a top 10 quarterback most seasons. So I think him getting the opportunity to show people what Lions fans have known for a long time is good. I wish it would have worked out with the Lions. But, you know, that's the way the NFL works. You know, as for Jared Goff, I think I'm higher on him than most people. And even though week one was not the most impressive, I still think you don't become the number one overall pick on accident. And so, you know, he has been to a Super Bowl. That's a lie because the Lions have Jamie Collins. I was going to say, I don't think there's a player on the Lions roster with Super Bowl experience. There is, but no one led their team there as a starting quarterback. And again, Jared Goff did it, you know, as a quote unquote game manager with a great defense. But I still think you have to have a level of physical ability to be able to get your team to that position. And so I think it will be determined, his success will be determined based on how much he's able to get out of the talent that the Lions have this year, because it, in my opinion, is a very clear downgrade at a lot of positions. I think running back's one of the few positions where it was an upgrade. Obviously, a guy you guys are familiar with in Jamal Williams, now kind of the 1A. I think as the season goes on, DeAndre Swift will start to take a larger bulk of the carries, but he's not healthy right now. So obviously Jamal Williams is the number one for Detroit. I think the biggest thing is Jared Goff is a true West Coast style quarterback in the sense that he's not going to push the ball downfield unless it, you know, is 100% chance of success. And there were times where Matthew Stafford trusted his arm too much and maybe turned the ball over a few times more than you would have liked. But I think as a fan and someone that, you know, cares about the team, both as a fan and trying to look at it from this perspective that we do, I would like to see more willingness to go down the field and try and make plays happen. I know the receiving core is not going to win any awards this year, but I think it's still too early to truly tell how impactful Jared Goff can be. Ultimately, it was bittersweet seeing Matthew Stafford leave, but I think it's good for him. He deserves to have the kind of success that I think he's going to have in Los Angeles.
Defense and like team overall, I think it's upgrade for Stafford, but I think especially coaching, from what he's mostly gotten in Detroit, there was a period of success, and I've talked about it on this podcast. Certainly, I kind of thought the Lions had something good going with Jim Caldwell, but they put the kibosh on that probably far too early, and you know, been a tailspin ever since. And so I think, you know, getting Sean McVay will also be, you know, a coach that can really get the best out of Stafford too. So I think that's also going to be an upgrade and something that can't be too overstated.
Well, right. And I think it's super interesting because the Lions got to a point where they determined, hey, winning 9 or 10 games and losing in the playoffs is not good enough for us anymore. And for normal teams, maybe that's the case. Maybe that should be your standard, but you have to understand, and ownership should know this. They've, you know, it's been the same family of ownership for, I mean, my lifetime and both of yours combined probably, is that 9 wins or 10 wins and losing in the first round of the playoffs is a success. That is the Lions growing and being more successful. And you have to keep trying to build upon that year after year. I think firing Jim Caldwell set the, you know, quote unquote rebuild, which obviously as a Lions fan, you know, is a constant state, not a single season endeavor. But that's been going on, you know, and it set it back, I think, several years, obviously all the way through the Matt Patricia era, which was a disaster. And now I think Dan Campbell's got the right mindset. I think he's got the kind of personality that players are going to want to play for. Whether or not that translates into X's and O's success, I'm not sure. But I think because he's not so much an X's and O's guy, and not saying he isn't. I've never met Dan Campbell, obviously. But you see by the way he hired his assistants that there's a lot of, almost the entire Lions coaching staff is former NFL players. Like, these are guys that understand the game of football and are going to help Dan Campbell a lot, I think, and, you know, being able to coach the X's and O's. And he's going to be a guy that I think is a great motivator of people. And that says a lot, because I think the biggest thing you could say about Patricia is that the players didn't like him. You know, whether or not Dan Campbell's the smartest guy in the room, it doesn't matter, because you like him. You like going into battle with somebody that's got your best interests at heart. And that was something that obviously was a huge kind of downfall of Matt Patricia.
I'd say it went beyond like. It seems like they flat out just didn't respect him. But I also think that's probably because it seemed like he didn't respect the players.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it's like I said, the comment about being the smartest guy in the room, I think Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia coming from New England came with this sense of, well, of course we know what we're doing. We've been in New England. What do you like? How would you even dare question us? And I think there's a lot, like, I think Bill Belichick's a great coach, but even last year you saw, like, I think a lot of Bill Belichick's credit should be given to Tom Brady. He took a team that was a middling team, I think 7-9 the year before he got there with Jameis Winston, and turned them immediately into a Super Bowl contender. And I know that there was roster turnover, but Tom Brady's first year without Bill Belichick, he won a Super Bowl. And in Bill Belichick's first season without Tom Brady, they missed the playoffs. And I think that says a lot. But yeah, that kind of New England mindset that Patricia and Quinn had ultimately was their downfall. And I think, you know, it's too early to tell how well Dan Campbell or Brad Holmes, the GM, are going to do. But it feels like it feels like they care. And I think that goes a long way.
Jesse, would you care to add anything to this coaching carousel talk?
I guess the only thing I'd add to it is you can't keep having turnover like that. You know, you got with Dan Campbell being here and Anthony Lynn, who I think is a really good offensive coordinator. You got to give these guys, it can't be, you know, a 1 or 2 year. And if it's, you know, not all roses, you know, you can't move on. And that's the thing in the NFL. It might take 3 years or 4 years to build what you're really trying to build. It might take a few drafts. You know, I don't know if Goff is the long-term answer. He still is a pretty young guy. I mean, he's only been in the league 6 years. It feels so much more. I don't know why, but they got a nucleus right now, I think, of players that they really like. Unfortunately, they had a pretty bad injury in the secondary, but, you know, you got to build off of that. So, you know, and I know you as a Detroit Lions fan, you've heard that plenty of times, you know, factory of sadness and, you know, losing does suck. But if you see kind of what the Browns are doing right now, if you see a light at the end of the tunnel and you got the group there and you can start building and you can get these guys to believe together, something special could happen. And, you know, and like you said, it doesn't have to be the smartest man in the room. It's a mentality and something that if this team can buy into, you know, they could start winning some football games. It's just the leash has to be a little longer, in my opinion. It can't just be, we expect you to win right now. And if you don't, we're going to just change this whole thing over and blow it up. And you're never going to get to where you want to go.
It's interesting that you mentioned that because both Brad Holmes, the GM, and Dan Campbell signed 6-year contracts this offseason when they were hired, which I think speaks to the fact that the ownership understands that it's not going to be a quick thing, that they've committed to these guys, that as long as they're moving in the right direction, they're going to have time to fully implement their system. And then you'll know, like, maybe they don't get to 6 years, but by year four, like, say at the end of year four, you still haven't made the playoffs. Like, then you know that it's something's not working. Like, you have to give them the time to get all the way through. I think the same way in college football, these coaches that get fired after 3 seasons,
you have not had
a full thing. I think college contracts in most cases should get you at least 4 years. If you can't win with a group of your seniors that you brought in, then you're not the guy. Right. Here in Michigan, when Rich Rodriguez was the coach of Michigan and he got fired after year three, what would have been his fourth year, Brady Hoke comes in and wins the Sugar Bowl. And everyone goes, oh, Brady Hoke's a great coach. He did this, that, and the other. He was playing with all Rich Rodriguez's players. You think Rich Rodriguez couldn't have won the Sugar Bowl that year with all of his guys? Like, and then in the same way, Brady Hoke was fired after year three. And I think Jim Harbaugh had an 11-win season in his first year. Like, these guys were fired, and the coach after them gets all the credit without doing any of the work. And I'm not saying that they didn't make an impact coaching and changing things up. But from just a personnel standpoint, you have to, and you know, college is different than the pros because there is that turnover every 4 years, but you have to give these guys a chance to implement their system and really see if it's going to work or not.
So I want to go back to the Lions week one game. And I guess go back to talking about the change in culture. You know, they lost 41-33, but they were down, 31-10 at halftime. I feel like in the Matt Patricia Lions, they might have just laid down and died in that second half. Honestly, I think the players would have just, you know, not playing for him and not feeling that they get the respect they deserve. Whereas you saw them fight back and they won the second half 23-10 and only lost by one possession. So I think just that alone shows the fights there. The players are gonna fight for Campbell, like you were saying.
You're absolutely right. It was 41-17 at the 2-minute warning, and I turned the game off. You know, I was like, well, you know, not like I was expecting a win, so my disappointment level was not as low as sometimes. But then I see they score, and I was like, okay, great. And then they recover the onside kick. It's like, well, that's pretty nifty. That hasn't happened in a while. And then they score again. And then they force a turnover and get the ball back. They had a very realistic chance to potentially tie that game by scoring all, like, they obviously didn't, but if they did, they would have scored 24 points in 2 minutes, which is something that Matt Patricia's teams could never have imagined doing. You guys have obviously followed the Lions in a close enough way, being, you know, covering a division team, that Matthew Stafford was the king of the fourth quarter comeback. And show that Goff, you know, I don't think it was on Goff the way as much as Matt's or Matthew Stafford was able to do that. But I think the belief that the coaching staff instills in the players, and then you look back and you go, well, hey, if we didn't throw that terrible pass that got picked off for a pick six right before halftime, we have a tie ball game now, or we even had a chance to win. It's just one of those situations where you realize how close you were, and maybe that hurts more because you go, man, all we had to do is, if we literally don't make one mistake with 30 seconds before half, we're in a position after the way the game ended that we're in overtime now, in a game that a lot of people think we had no reasonable shot to win. I don't know. The defense isn't great. Jeff Okuda, obviously, tore his Achilles, is really, really ramping up the speed of the tank or the bus train, and it's unfortunate, but he looked lost last year and now is not even going to have that opportunity to try and improve this year. It's just really, really unfortunate. And I guess that's kind of what happens, though, when there's a two-man draft and you pick third, because it was, you know, Chase Young was going second and Burrow was going first. So it was really like, pick your next best out of a group of guys that are good but not great. And so you pick a guy that showed a lot in college and then just can't make it happen. And now he, you know, had a tough time having to try and learn a system via, you know, Zoom and whatever for COVID last year. Now he's done for the year. Like, he's so far behind that even if he gets healthy for next year, like, you have a guy that comes in and now he can be at the same level ahead of Okuda now, because Okuda's pretty much down. He's coming in, he'll be almost coming in as a rookie in terms of knowledge and stuff next year as a third year player. I think he gets more leash than your average guy would because you picked him third overall. But eventually it's like, you're either going to produce or we're going to move on.
I guess they didn't even really put Okuda much on Adams last year, some early games when he was still learning. But I guess we said it about the Saints. We weren't concerned about the corners outside of Lattimore, and that turned out to, you know, the Packers really couldn't move the ball much on offense. So it's that same thing. Like, the expectation is these veteran Packers receivers should be able to take it to this this Lions secondary. And it's I think the big question mark is, can the offensive line hold up the front seven? That's, I think, where the big battle is. They really couldn't against the Saints, and, you know, the Packers scored 3 points as a result. Obviously, there's a lot of other factors. Again, dwell on it. Listen to the last episode. It was painful enough to record that. But I think that the real question is the Lions offense. How do the Packers contain it? Because they really couldn't against the Saints. That was also a big issue. Just looking at what the Lions did, I mean, Goff threw it 57 times, and over half his attempts went to three players: the tight end, TJ Hockenson, and then both running backs, Jamal Williams, DeAndre Swift. Last year, what we saw with the Packers is the ability to cover the tight end a lot better than what had been in previous seasons, when it was a position that could just torch the team awful. And so I think they're better prepared to take on TJ Hockenson, but I still think it's going to be tough to prevent him from having a good day. And then it comes down to, okay, the running backs, the former Packer Jamal Williams, but also DeAndre Swift, who I think has that similar explosiveness as a receiver, especially, that Alvin Kamara does. And again, they had really no answer for Kamara last week. So that's really where my concern is. Jesse, do you see any way that the Packers really have of stopping all three of those players in particular? Swift, Hockenson, I think, are the two biggest concerns, but then also our former Packer, Jamal Williams.
I don't think we're completely stopping anybody, which is fine. You don't need to. But the way the Lions are playing offense right now is really kind of scary to me, because it just falls right into all our issues. One, I'm going to always start with, it's the offensive line. Even with Taylor Decker out, I think Detroit just has a really good line. They play well together. You know how big of a fan I am of Frank Ragnow. I think he's a stud. I think it's a good group. But what Detroit's doing, instead of trying to force the ball down the field, they're, you know, they're taking what the defense is giving them. You know, the running backs had 16 receptions last week. That's the stuff that that just gives me nightmares with the Packers, because, I mean, over the last 15 years, you know, running backs catching the ball in space has given us fits. And, you know, now Detroit's doing it. It's like, oh, dang, like I don't like it. It's just a bad matchup for us. I think we have the players, you know, to control it and contain it. But as far as doing it, we haven't, you know. Hockenson, he had almost 100 yards and a touchdown. I think we could match up pretty good there, but the running backs getting the ball in space is the key to stopping the Lions from scoring. And until the Packers start doing it, I don't like it, you know. And, you know, we have plenty of ideas on how we can do it, you know, using the safeties, Amos, like that. Savage, who looks to be okay, he should go, even though he hurt his shoulder last week. But he should be fine. You know, those guys, I think, can match up and slow it down. It's just the fact of doing it. And like I said, that's the big black eye on the Packers defense, is running backs, you know, killing them. So hopefully they can find a way to, you know, slow it down. And I'm fine. You know, they're going to get their catches, right? You know, if both running backs again are close to, you know, 15 catches, that's okay. You just can't let them, you know, have explosive plays and finding the end zone in it. You know, if they have 16 catches for about 70 yards and no scores, okay, that's okay. But have a few big plays and a touchdown here, a touchdown there, then that opens up other things. So stopping their running backs from, you know, just piling on the yardage is the main thing for me.
One thing I'm looking at right now is the over-under in the spread. And the over-under is set at 48, and the Packers are 10.5-point favorites. I don't know if you guys have seen that or if there's been changes to lines since whatever I'm looking at has been published, but that line seems like it was definitely made before Sunday's game. But really, I think that's ridiculous even if the Packers are playing great, because what we've seen in recent history is even when the Packers are humming and the offense is doing great, the games against Detroit have been nail-biting. How are we almost losing to Patricia's team when we win 13 games that season? And, you know, last-minute field goals to win both games. I mean, I think it's going to be a close game either way. Or I think if it's a blowout anyway, it's probably because Detroit's completely dominating the Packers and they have no answer, kind of like what we just saw against the Saints. So I think a 10.5-point spread is ridiculous. I'd take the Lions in that all day. There's no way it's going to be that much of a... I think the Packers are still kind of trying to figure things out, and maybe they do, but even if they do, I don't think they're going to win by more than one possession.
I don't know. I think this kind of game, like, I don't think Aaron Rodgers had a game that poor probably in the last 5 years, and I obviously didn't look at his stats from the last 5 years, but under 150 yards and two interceptions, like, it's unheard of from Aaron Rodgers, and I think he's going to come back with a vengeance. And you guys mentioned, you know, Hockenson and the running backs, like, that really is all the Lions have. So you don't have to, like, your corners, you know, Jair Alexander can go one-on-one. Like, Tyrell Williams, Quintez Cephas, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Trinity Benson, none of those guys should really, like, worry the Packers secondary. And so you can put a safety and a linebacker on Hockenson. And Goff's not, like I said, in the first game, he threw the ball 57 times, completed, 38 of them, and didn't touch 250 yards, which tells you all you need to know about where those throws were targeted to, who they were targeted to, and how far down the field they were. He just didn't push the ball down the field. So I think if you're a Packers defensive coordinator, you go, well, we can keep one-on-one on the outside. We'll double Hockenson with a safety and a linebacker. Everything else we just keep in front of us because they're not going to take shots down the field. And they're going to have to beat us 4 yards at a time. And I don't think the Lions can consistently string those 4 yard positive plays together to march down the field and score.
That's a great idea. I agree with you. You know, like, you would think, you know, that would be the plan, right? You know, like you said, you can one-on-one with Jair, you know, just play tight, man up. But like last week, same thing with the Saints. I mean, the Saints wide receivers are arguably worse than what Detroit's going to haul out there. And it's like, man, why are we playing 8 yards off and all this soft coverage and then getting beat deep and all that dumb stuff? So while in theory it sounds great, it's they have to deploy it. But yeah, I like the matchup. I really do. You know, like you said, you know, Jared Goff is not trying to push the ball down the field. So everything's up in front, you know, get some pressure, play tight. You should be okay. You should be in the driver's seat. It's just the point of doing it. So we'll see. Hopefully, you know, Joe Barry after his first game and, you know, just getting run all over the field on, you'd think they're going to change some things up.
It's funny because you've got the two Packers fans saying, oh, it could be close. I mean, I'm even thinking the Lions could win this game. Like I'm like after the performance the Packers put on, I'm not walking in there with any kind of expectations that Green Bay is definitely going to win this. And then you got the Lions fan who's saying, oh, yeah, Rodgers is going to torch them. So that's just funny. I guess, honestly, we're both used to the opposite, right? Trevor, you're probably used to seeing Aaron Rodgers produce so much against the Lions that you never want to doubt it. And honestly, Jesse, we've seen enough. I mean, there was a stretch where the Lions swept the Packers 2 years in a row. Like, we've seen enough close games and losses to the Lions to know that to never overestimate them. So, division games, right? That's so much fun.
Yeah, those division games, man. They never seem to go. Yeah, I would love to win by 58, you know, and cruise the whole second half. But for some reason, that just doesn't happen as much as I want it to. So, I could see a pretty good game. You know, I mean, I don't know if we're going predictions yet, but I think that Packers pull away. I really do. You know, after last week, I really like to believe that this team, you know, is resilient and they're going to come back and, you know, everything that happened week one, hopefully they can help us forget it a little bit because it still tastes pretty bad. But, you know, if you look at the rosters, we're being honest here, you know, the Packers roster, you know, top to bottom, they should win this football game. You know, it just is what it is. But, you know, it's you still have to go do it. You know, Detroit's got a new coach and a team believing in what he wants to do. And that stuff matters. So, I still look for a dogfight. I really do.
You know, you guys were talking about those last-second field goals. That was 2 years ago, right? Where yep. the Packers led for 0 seconds of the games and went 2-0. Even yep. in the games where the Lions outplay the Packers for 60 minutes, they still found a way to lose. Now, the one of them, the hands to the face, that still irks me almost as much as the phantom face mask on Rodgers before the Hail Mary to Richard Rodgers. That play legitimately made me cry because I was so defeated that they can't, like, the Breaking Bad scene, like, he can't keep getting away with this. I was like, oh, that. So, like I said, even in games where the Lions thoroughly outplay the Packers for all 60 minutes, they still found a way to lose both the games. And that's why I just, like, can't have any semblance of confidence.
So it sounds like we all need to have like this emotional draining. So as listeners, if you need that too, you can reach out to any of us at FPC_Packers. Jesse Hall, not Jesse Pinkman, but Jesse Hall at Hall_JHall1212. I'm at Senra Says. Trevor, is there anything else you wanted to add to this or plug anything before we head out?
I don't think so. Like I said, I think I'm also very worried for the Lions. We didn't talk about this yet. The game's on Monday Night Football. Everybody who wants to watch football is going to be watching this game. It's not like you can hide away your 1 p.m. Fox game where somebody lives in a different state's not going to see how bad you play. The eyes of the nation that watch football are going to watch this game. And so I think for both teams, it's like, well, the Packers just got beat by 35 by Jameis Winston, who threw 30 interceptions in a season before. And the Lions, you know, there's some intrigue there that you go, they all nearly came back from 24 points down in 2 minutes. But I just wish that sense of urgency for the Lions was there, you know, maybe during like the first 58 minutes. The Lions have a propensity for playing probably the best fourth quarters in the NFL. But most of the time they do it after they've already dug themselves a 2 or 3 touchdown lead so it doesn't matter. It'll be interesting to see what happens, and I'm curious to see what the national reaction is after the game based on how it goes.
Trevor, thank you for joining us, and I know we'll probably do this again later on in the season. Division games always too. So Jesse, any final thoughts for the listeners?
Well, you know, go Pack go.
Then we'll say it here all the time on the Full Press Packers Pod.